G'day, I'm Sean, and welcome to the Car Expert Podcast. We're back again for another week. This is episode 10 of the year. Can you believe that, guys? We're already 10 weeks into 2024.
It's happened fast.
I know, it's crazy. As you might notice, Scott's back.
Hello.
We'll talk in a second about what you're doing. James is here as well.
You shuffled the furniture while I was away.
Well, yeah, we did. James and I had a chat last week, and we were like, we like this setup a bit better. And so we just said, Scott can deal with it.
No, it's enjoyable. I'm here for it so far.
So what were you up to last week, Scott? Why weren't you here?
Before you mentioned the word holiday, it was a work trip. I was in France with Peugeot driving the new E3008. Review goes live on the website tomorrow, but we, along with the drive down in the south of France, stayed in Paris for a night and then got a train out to Sochaux, which is where, I've mispronounced that by the way, where Peugeot was founded, where it builds a lot of its cars and where it has its museum. Fascinating museum, like woodworking tools dating back to the 1800s from the original Peugeot family business. The first saw as we know it, you know how most saws now have teeth in a certain way? That's a Peugeot patent, apparently. It was a very interesting trip.
Sounds it. And James, you, as we said last week on the podcast, you were nicking straight off on a launch. What did you get up to last week?
Yeah, a much shorter plane ride to the point there was actually a plane ride at all. But I drove the new Nissan Qashqai e-Power, which is a really interesting and important car for the brand in Australia because it's a segment that has a growing level of electrification. Nissan has had electrified Qashqais in Europe and the UK for quite a long time, and they finally brought it here, I think almost 2 years after it launched. So
it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I can't actually tell you much more than that. The embargo is later this week, but it's a Qashqai with an e-power drivetrain.
Yes, so those reviews will be on the Car Expert website. Scott's on Wednesday
morning. Yep.
And James Thursday?
Thursday for the Qashqai, yes.
Thursday, there you go. So come Friday, you can read all of them unembargoed. But we're going to dive straight in. VFAX is out for February. And I seem to recall on the podcast, we had a couple of chats about sales are going to go down. Numbers aren't going to be as good this year. I guess we were really wrong, weren't we?
I actually don't recall ever saying that.
No.
So you definitely shouldn't pull up clips of us saying that and put them in here. Look, it's still something we're expecting this year. And as we've previously said, we've said it probably the past 3 or 4 months. The nature of VFACTS is that it's not the number of orders taken or cars sold, it's the number of vehicles delivered, and that includes a lot of historical demand. So in some cases, it's brands bringing new products in, like Mitsubishi with the Triton, like Nissan getting supply of X-Trail. In other cases, it's people who ordered cars last year. We are still expecting sales to slow down through 2024, but yeah, I mean, we could be sitting here next month and there might be another big ship arrive and we'll look stupid again.
Yeah, so 105,000 deliveries in February, which is pretty decent. EV sales were nearly 10% of the deliveries, which put Tesla, the Model 3, third overall behind Ranger and Hilux, which is bloody impressive, isn't it?
It is worth noting with that Model 3 that there were a lot of deliveries scheduled for January.
Mm, and then they had stink bugs came around, didn't they?
Stink bugs and a problem with ADRs, with the rear seat. So that's essentially 2 months worth of deliveries in 1 month, but still a really impressive number regardless because you halve it and it's still in the top 20.
So Toyota, top spot overall, no surprise. Mazda, Ford, Nissan, out of nowhere, up, what have we got here? 157% increase in deliveries. So what? Where's that come from, James?
Yeah, so Nissan reported one of its best months in a long time, and it was, I think, the fastest growing brand in the top 20 last month. A lot of that's come down to normalised supply. So on the Qashqai event, Adam Patterson, who's their MD, was saying that, you know, their supply is normalising, they're finally getting more cars in, they can supply the demand that's coming through. One of the key standouts was the new X-Trail, which has been out for a little bit now. The e-Power launched last year, but it had its best month ever and was only second to the RAV4 in the mainstream mid-size race, and then if you include Model Y, it's probably slightly behind there, but it had like 2,500 sales, which was more than all of its other direct competitors bar the RAV4, which is probably its best result in years.
Yeah, it's a car that we have liked for a while, and I think Nissan's been really held back on, so it does feel like it's sort of the reflection of that it is a quality product and it's now finally arriving.
So is that help? You say it's held back a little bit. Obviously, it shares most of its architecture with the Mitsubishi Outlander, which is perennially good. Like it's ninth, 2,200 deliveries in
it's
February.
It's consistently in the top 10.
Is this a case of Mitsubishi get first pickings and then Nissan get to come in with the X-Trail later on?
Yeah, look, at risk of diving really deep into automotive group politics, the way that Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi alliance works is quite complicated. Nissan has a certain set of markets that it's meant to lead in, and Australia is one of the markets where Mitsubishi is given some sort of priority because we're a market that likes rugged vehicles, four-wheel drive vehicles that Mitsubishi is known for. So I don't know the exact specifics on Outlander versus X-Trail, but as a general rule on that product, it fits where Mitsubishi is positioned in Australia. And I would imagine that's probably why Mitsubishi Australia got it before Nissan did, because they're big in the States, big in Japan. They have a different set of priorities.
The other part of that, though, is that Australia is a top market for X-Trail. I think we're one of the top five markets in the world for X-Trail. So it's still, I think that's perhaps why we're getting a better supply of that than some of their other cars. But yeah, as Scott said, like Australia is a really important market for Mitsubishi. You've seen with Triton, ASX, and even Eclipse Cross, the breadth of range that they have here is quite big for a fairly small company and with older vehicles. So, you know, there's definitely something to be said there.
So rounding out the top 10, Kia, Hyundai, no surprise. Tesla in eighth, Isuzu Ute, which I always find impressive they're in the top 10 because they've only got two cars. And then MG rounding out the top 10, which is interesting because they've got a new MG3 coming later this year, early next year. So I guess it's probably a bit of a push there to get some of that old stock out the door.
No longer Australia's cheapest new car, the MG3. It's going to have hybrid power. It's going to be 24 odd grand, something like that. Kia Picanto now undercuts it, but it's going to be a much more modern car as well. So it'll be more expensive. I wouldn't be surprised if it's sold in similar volumes to the current one.
Now, I'm going to ask you guys what surprised you most about this month. Mine is Rolls-Royce saw a 300% increase in sales and delivered four cars. Which, you know what, to be fair, looking at some of the others in the higher up in the list is probably more money for them than LDV or Chery. So,
when your average transaction price is $1 million a unit, that's a lot of money coming in.
And congratulations to the government, because the luxury car tax on those would be lovely for them. But okay, so James, what surprised you this month?
Well, sort of following up from what we're talking about before, Nissan had a really good month. X-Trail set an all-time record. Qashqai and Navara all had really good months. And I think it's just the supply normalizing. And with the launch of ePower in X-Trail last year and the launch of Qashqai this year, they're hoping to sort of further that more. And we also got confirmation that the Navara will be getting some form of an update in the coming months. So given that car is getting on a little bit and you've got some really solid competitors in that segment, you've got the Kia Ute coming as well. It'll be interesting to see what Nissan does, because there's so much volume in that segment, and that's a nameplate that's been around for a really long time. I think people trust the Navara still. So if they can do something good to give it a bit of a boost, you might see it do some really substantial volume, and then Nissan could be right back up there with, you know, in the sales charts overall by the end of the year.
And just on that Kia Ute, we did speak about it last week. There seems there's going to be a 2.2 litre four-cylinder. That's going to be the engine in that car by the sounds of it when it comes to Australia.
Yeah, I think that's the reports out of Korea. I think that at least at launch, it'll have that engine.
So that's a Sorento engine?
Likely,
It'll be a version of it, potentially. I don't think they'll give it a dual-clutch transmission like the Sorento has. No. And I think also, if you look at the outputs on the Sorento, they're not really competitive with a Ranger V6, for example.
They have 440 newton metres, something like that, isn't it?
I would imagine they'll be looking at 500 or more, because you can't launch undergunned if you're trying to prove to Australia you're real about this.
Which is what Mitsubishi have just learnt with the new Triton. So they've come out now with 500 newton metres. Yeah. They're on par with everyone else.
Exactly.
So, back to VFAX. Scott, what surprised you this month?
There are two for me. The first is the MG4 outsold the Audi A3 and all those sort of hatchbacks over $40,000. It's still not doing as much volume as a Model 3, but it's selling quite strongly, and it's sort of taking people away, I think, from those premium cars, because it's a similar size, it's a great price, and it's fully electric. The other one for me was the Suzuki Jimny, which actually finished third in its segment behind the Mazda CX-3 and the Kia Stonic.
Not something I'd cross-shop with the Suzuki Jimny, I'll be honest.
Nor me. But I think Suzuki's had really tough supply of that car for a long time. The four-door has finally launched, which no doubt helped. It's cool to see people still buying interesting cars. There's a lot of really dull stuff in that segment. The Jimny is not dull. And I'm glad to see there's going to be more colourful little boxy four-wheel drives on the road. Yeah,
absolutely. So yes, more interesting cars, car makers of the world, more interesting cars.
Please.
Would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of interesting cars, that leads us into our next segment really nicely. Reports out of India, of all places, that Toyota might be bringing back the FJ Cruiser. Now, I don't know about you guys, I loved the recent FJ Cruiser. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It was a 4-litre V6, big boxy thing, incredibly capable off-road, but I'll open up to you guys. Tell us what we know about this potential FJ Cruiser coming.
So Toyota has shown off a number of concepts that could be this thing. As part of its really big run of concepts about 2 years ago, there was a car there that I can't remember exactly what it was called. It wasn't the Urban Cruiser, but it was something along those lines. It then released more photos of it again, and it was essentially like a Jimny or slightly bigger sized car with really rugged Land Cruiser styling hues on it. It's since been reported that, yes, it will make production, and this is the latest sort of, I suppose, iteration of that news. What it'll be isn't quite clear, because it could be an electric car based on these concepts. They might do a version for third world or developing countries with a petrol engine. I think Toyota has realised that there is an incredible level of nostalgia for its old off-roaders. You look at the new Prado, and it has a really cool retro design. You look at the new 70 Series, and they've really lent into the classic look. I think between that and between the fact that the Jimny is selling strongly and that people really like rugged little cars, there's a huge opportunity for it there.
So my understanding is it could be sort of based off the Toyota Champ, which is a little ute, Southeast Asia special sort of thing, but like a brilliant looking little car that I think all three of us would love to see here.
Yeah.
Probably very cheap if it came here too. But so it would be a lot smaller than the current one. If it is based off that Champ, it'd be a lot smaller than the one that we've just recently had that I think it ceased sales last year or the year before?
So if it is based off the Champ, it'd likely be either Corolla Cross or RAV4 size, somewhere around there, potentially even smaller. The one that was outgoing was based on a Prado and was much bigger.
Mm. Okay, so look, fingers crossed, I'd love to see it here. I don't know about you guys, I'd love to see it. FJ is super important for Toyota. It's one of their, it's up there with Falcon and those sort
as
of
name
names.
Plates go,
like that's the original Land Cruiser. So be cool to see it come back. But I'm curious, I want to ask you guys, James, I'll start with you. What classic nameplate would you love to see come back to Australia?
Is this specific to Toyota?
No, anything at all.
Oh, because I noted down some cool Toyota ones.
By all means, if you want to be Toyota.
I had Celica and MR2, that would be really cool, rebirths. Mm-hmm. And then they have that really cool supercar concept that they've got that's allegedly making it to production. If that was like a reincarnation of the GT1 of the 90s, that Le Mans racer, I think that's a really cool... I think Toyota's got so much heritage and, you know, they've made a name for themselves in the last maybe 20 years for having, like, white goods on wheels, but there's some really interesting stuff in their history. And I think as Japan sort of coming back around and not recycling, but rebirthing their iconic nameplates, like, you know, you look at Land Cruiser or FJ and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a real opportunity for them to lean into their sports car nameplates and some of the older things from a few decades ago with the new world of electrification, all the stuff that they're doing at the moment, because you can sort of make it whatever you want. And all these cool retro modern styling and all that kind of stuff, people love that now. So I think there's a real opportunity there.
Mm. What about you, Scott? What would you like to see come back?
I've got two very different answers. The first is the Nissan 180SX. I would love to see a modern comparison between a BRZ and 86 and a 180SX. I just feel like fun, affordable sports coupes are really few and far between. So I'm going that way with the Japanese stuff. When it comes to the European stuff, I actually really want to see a modern Audi Quattro.
Ooh,
give it the 5-cylinder engine, give it sort of concept car boxy looks. And I'm very here for it.
Mm. Could you imagine if they did that with like a decent hybrid system? You could have like anti-lag from the electric system. That would be brilliant.
5-cylinder engine, TTRS, concept car body, job done.
And I'm sure 30 years later, it'll be worth $1 million as well. So
now, which Ford Falcon do you want to bring back?
Oh, that's a tough one. XB Coupe, I'm done.
There you go.
Yeah, bring back like a proper Interceptor.
The only correct answer was AU, but that's okay.
All right, so I'm curious for our what would you choose this week question. I've gone a little bit different. Rather than picking between cars, I just want to know, what would you pick if you wanted a tow rig, but you could also tour Australia in? It's a tough question. I know.
I feel like you're someone that would do something like this, so I feel like you're a good person to ask for.
Yeah, it's a tough one, I know, because there's a lot of options, and it's like, what suits you best? But just thinking, just generally, what would you go?
So for me, I'd buy a Land Cruiser 300. I've actually just hopped out of a GR Sport, and I really enjoyed driving it, and not just because the aircon is incredible, although it is. But I think if you are driving around Australia, you want to know there are dealers everywhere, you want to know there's support everywhere, and you want to know that the car has been tested to do it. And as much as part of it is marketing, there is a reality to the fact that Toyota really does live in the sort of deepest, darkest, strangest corners of Australia. So for me, that's what I'd do if I was doing a lap of the country.
So Old Faithful is what you're
Old
going
Faithful,
for.
Old Faithful, exactly.
All right, James, what about you? What would you pick?
I'm kind of torn because I think if I took the dealer coverage stuff out of the equation, I think a Volkswagen Touareg would probably still be my one.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
Like, that's what they... That car built that sort of thing about it with the first few generations. You still see all all of the first three generations of it. You see them everywhere, hooked up to horse floats, caravans.
Sitting on tow trucks.
Yeah. I haven't seen that.
It just happens to like look the other way when he does.
Yeah, I'm thinking more of the V10 one. The other seem to be fine.
Because like while I think that the Land Cruiser 300, the new Prado, and even that new the Lexus LX and the GX, they're really cool and everything. They're kind of like everyone has one, and they're sort of a little bit boring. I think what the Touareg and some of those European cars do a little bit better is that they give you that really luxurious all-round experience. They're more car-like to drive and easier to live with while also having that more rugged capability. I don't know how often people are towing. If you're towing all the time, maybe a Land Cruiser 300, but if you're just doing the odd, you know, family holiday or something like that over a long weekend, I feel like if you can have a car that for 90% of the time when you're using it normally is really nice. Not to say that Land Cruiser's not nice.
No, different thing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Air suspension, yep. Like all the tech, you know, all that kind of stuff. I feel like that is, and it's still like honest enough. Like it's not super flashy, but it's still a bit nice.
Sort of Q7. It's just a little bit awesome. And to be fair, if you go to Europe, like you'll see Touaregs towing horse floats and things like that everywhere around the place.
Absolutely. So I just saw a Renault Clio towing a caravan when I was last in Europe. So I think the Europeans like to tow with anything.
So Sean, I'm towing James's Touareg out of the dunes in my Land Cruiser. What are you towing him out of the dunes in?
Ah, see, that's a tough one, and I just want to say Ranger Raptor because I think. Okay. Cool. Yep. But no. It'd be a Ram. I think a Ram, like a Laramie. Because it tows 4.5 ton if you want it to. It's super comfortable and it's pretty capable off-road. And it's about the same price as the Land Cruiser. So
it's very similar money to the GR Sport, yeah.
Yes, and plenty more room at the back.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so if any of those cars interest you and you're interested in buying one, did you know we have a website that can help you do that? Head to Google, type in Help Me Car Expert. It'll take you to a page where we can help you find a new car, we can connect you to a dealer, and you can talk to a consultant who's based in Brisbane. So they'll know what you're talking about and where you are. So they'll be able to help you find a new car quicker and possibly even cheaper than you thought you might be able to. So head to Google, type in Help Me Car Expert. And if you do use the service, leave a comment. Let us know how was it, because we'd love to hear some feedback on it. All right, guys, it's time for the review of the week. And it's a bit of a spicy one. I haven't driven it, but I'd love to. It's the Ioniq 5N. And James, you, lucky devil, got to go to a racetrack and drive it.
I did, yeah. So I joined Hyundai Australia a couple of weeks ago to do a road and track drive with the Ioniq 5N. So we got to test it out. I think it's called the Great Mountain Road or something, up to Laguna, out towards Newcastle Way sort of thing. I'm not very familiar with New South Wales geography, so forgive me if I'm getting it wrong. We took it through some really great roads out there, and then we also took it to Eastern Creek.
Sydney Motorsport Park.
And Sydney, yeah.
The artist formerly known as, yeah.
I never know how, I can't keep up with these things. But okay, Sydney Motorsport Park, and we did the GP circuit in that. So yeah, had a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it's about $111,000. Yeah. So it's a fairly big jump up over the next one, next Ioniq 5
down.
It's
about a 25, 30 grand difference. I know there's an updated version coming, so I don't know whether there'll be price adjustments, but yeah, give or take.
But it's also a hell of a lot more power. So, okay, the numbers are a little confusing. So see if you can explain the power outputs, because it's listed with two different power outputs.
So in its standard setting, it's making, I think, 448 kilowatts and 700 newton metres.
So it's not messing around, is it?
No, it's still, you know, the same kind of power that you would get out of like a V8 AMG not long ago. Actually, still now.
It's four-cylinder now, but yes.
Well, yeah, like the bi-turbo like AMG GT is making that kind of power, you know? And then there's a mode called N-Grin Shift.
N-Grin Boost.
N-Grin Boost, sorry. There's several N-Grin things that you can do with it, but N-Grin Boost bumps that up to 478 kilowatts and 770 newton metres, so it's like Taycan Turbo territory. It's very, very powerful.
So it's just under 3.5 seconds to 0 to 100 with that boost function, isn't it?
How heavy is it? This is my question with all these electric performance cars. Lots of power, but if it weighs 18 tons.
Yeah, it's 2.1 tons.
It's pretty heavy.
It's very heavy, yeah, still. But it's a big car physically too. It's got like a 3,000 millimeter wheelbase. So it's got the same wheelbase as a Palisade. It's, you know, slightly bigger than a Tucson. Looks like a giant hatchback that's sort of jacked up. It's a really interesting thing, but when you see the N in particular in person, because of the way it looks, because it's so large, it sort of just looks like someone had this retro hatchback and then just clicked like the 1.5 times button and just blown up. Because it all sort of fits into the guards and everything really well. But, you know, I'm a tall guy, like I'm 6'1", not this gargantuan level, but you know, I'm a tallish guy and I walked up to it and I'm like, you know, my eye level is the roof line. So it's still a very tall, like wide thing. It's really well proportioned. It's got big 21-inch wheels, big brakes, huge wings, body kit, red striping everywhere. It's quite an imposing thing, and there's so many different colours that you can get, including a couple of matte finishes, so you can really personalise it, make it have a different flavour. I personally like the performance blue like everyone else, but yes, that orange is really cool as
okay.
well.
Okay, so it's I'm very curious about this because it was about a year ago now, we drove the EV6 GT from Kia, which I guess is like the cousin to the
Ioniq 5N. Very similar stuff underneath, yeah.
Which, it was when you just put it in car mode, it was very nice as just a car. How does the Ioniq 5N compare? Because I know the other Hyundai N cars are quite good at being cars. How's this one compare?
Yeah, it sort of plays to the brand's pillars. So there's everyday sports car, corner rascal, and track monster.
Are these settings in the screen?
Honestly. No, so it's part of their
marketing stuff, right?
So the car has to be able to be a comfortable or usable daily. It has to be fun to drive in corners, but it also has to be capable of racetrack driving. And that's pretty hard balance to get.
Absolutely.
You know? Even the Europeans don't always get it right. And you know, you're right, the EV6 GT, I did the launch of that as well, and I loved it. I thought it was really, really well done. It was a great all-round GT car. We did take it on like a very tight technical circuit that, you know, you could sort of play around with it a little bit, but it didn't feel like it was at home there. I think that's what Hyundai's really done well with the N. You can still drive it the same way in daily duties. You can keep it in its normal settings. It's quiet, it's comfortable, and whatever. It's got adjustable damping, all that kind of stuff. But then you can actually take it to the track and have a real amount of fun in it. And like, all of the journalists on that launch came away laughing, giggling, smiling, because we all just had so much fun.
So I want to know about some of the funky features Hyundai's given it, because this is an electric car with tunable engine noises, with fake gear shifts, with pops and cracks on the overrun, and with drift mode. Does it feel like fun and real, or does it feel kind of contrived and made up?
Yeah, that was something that I really wanted to get a feel for in person, because you know, you read it all on paper and it sounds a bit gimmicky, but you know, I did the entire, my drive, especially on the more technical sections of the road drive, I did it all with like the manual DCT mode and the engine noises, and it's got like a taco in front of me and everything. After a while, you forget that you're driving an EV because it does such a good job at immersing yourself in this experience that makes you feel like you're just driving a fun, fast car. And it gives you that, you know, those driver engagement inputs that sort of give you the feeling of like, oh, I'm shifting gears, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, that you just sort of forget about the other stuff. And it was the same on the track. Like, it wasn't, so I know some people still may not like it. You know, the engine noise itself, while it's based on the i30N's engine note, you still have that little bit of like synthesized, like auto-tuney sort of sound to it. But, you know, it the taco just revs out, you get the shift lights and everything. It's so much fun. And I personally really liked it, and I think everyone else on the event did too. I don't know what the general public might be like, because you know, we're sort of, journos are weird people. Like, we like really weird things.
I've never noticed.
Yeah. Hey, speak for yourself, video man.
Some less than others, and I won't name names, but you know, we all really enjoyed it, and I think it all came together really well. Perhaps in isolation, if there was like only one of these things and not all of them, it might be different. But you can even do like a clutch kick function by pulling the two paddles back. Like silly things like that. It's got a drift optimizer mode, which helps you manage a slider. That's like McLaren technology. It's got really, really cool stuff in there that, you know, regardless of whether you're a track novice or you know, it's just a family car that occasionally you want to take up a winding B road, you can really just have a lot of fun with it and customize it to your tastes, which is really impressive.
All right, so the big question then, Ioniq 5N, Kia EV6 GT, or would you just go Old Faithful and get the Model 3 Performance? I'll open up to the floor.
I'll let you go first.
It's a tough one.
Oh, okay.
Obviously the Model 3 Performance is a bit cheaper.
I haven't driven the 5N, but based on everything you've said about it, based on everything everyone overseas has said about it, I think that's probably what I'd go for. I love the idea of actually being able to enjoy it every day, playing with the gear shift and that sort of thing. Because whenever I drive an i30N, even if it's not the manual, you're just able to engage with the car in so many different ways and get joy from different elements of it. I love that Hyundai's tried to do that in their electric car beyond just making it fast.
James?
Yeah, I think I'd probably do the same. The EV6 in Australia is still lacking a couple of things. So the Ioniq 5N debuts the new Kia Hyundai cockpit with all the new software and wireless app, smartphone mirroring and things like that. So there's a few things there that are coming to some of the other models in the range. The EV6 GT, I think if I didn't want to go to the track ever, and perhaps wanted something a little less in your face in terms of design, it's still a very, very capable car, still very, very fast, and it'll save you like 10 grand. But I think as an all-round product, I think the i30N really... i30N. See, that's how good it is. Yes. I didn't even know. The Ioniq 5N, I think really is a cut above those other two options because it's a proper, like, it's an enthusiast car that just happens to be electric. I think the same way that people were so taken by the Taycan and the Audi e-tron GT, I think this is that car for perhaps a more attainable
half the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And like just the level of performance on offer plus the fun that you have. We spoke to Albert Bierman and he said to us, you know, it's not about lap times, it's about the smiles and laughs that you're going to have about this car. That's genuinely how I felt coming away from that launch.
But what was your lap time?
I didn't time it.
Oh,
Very convenient.
I think it's time we wrap up the podcast.
People are competitive and stuff.
I want to know what your pick is for the week.
Oh, my pick of the week, of course. We're nearly finished. I was just trying to get James,
James to talk about his lap time.
Okay, so I'll start. My pick of the week, I saw a video on Instagram, and I'll put it over here because I can't remember what channel it was, but basically they had an AMG GT3 car on the back of a Unimog and they were towing it around
for
Michelin USA. And I think that is a perfect two-car garage. I think the big Unimog, AMG GT3 car, but what more do you need? All right, Scott, what's yours for the week?
I watched on one of my flights the new season of Full Swing, which is Netflix's version of Drive to Survive, but for golf.
Okay. This is a car podcast.
Yeah,
Scott.
Stick with me here. It's a fun game to play. It's called Count the Number of Cadillacs. It's incredible how many of these guys drive big Cadillac Escalade four-wheel drives. Lots of shots of them in the car, and they get out and slam this massive door, and it is a Cadillac. Incredible. The crossover there really got me.
Hashtag not sponsored.
Hashtag not sponsored, exactly.
James, you got a pick for this week?
Yes, so I love to find weird and wacky things car-related on Instagram. Make sure I put that in.
And it's a different podcast.
I saw a video come up where, you know, the Toyota Coaster bus? They have a luxury version of that in Japan. So it has like captain's chairs and everything that fold and recline. And this video shows one that has like a frontal design. It's called the Athletes Package or whatever. And it looks like an Alphard at the front. So it's got an Alphard grill and like this super luxe interior. And I just thought, how cool is that?
Yeah, you need a truck license to drive it, but.
Yeah. Just get Jack to drive me.
Yeah. There you go, Jack is our man. All right, well, that pretty much brings us to the end. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with this week, guys?
Australian F1 Grand Prix, not this weekend, but the weekend after.
Away, yes.
It's all coming together. Albert Park looks like a racetrack now. It's very exciting.
It does, and we've got two Aussies on the grid. I don't remember the last time we had two Aussies on the grid, so.
Except for last year. No, we didn't. Sorry. Ricardo wasn't
racing. He was only there for about 10 minutes and then he's off the grid.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yes.
He never made it to Drive to Survive.
I've been watching Full Swing.
He might have been on the grid for like the marketing.
He didn't actually
get behind the wheel, did he?
Yes. So yeah, that'll be very exciting. I'm hoping the Minardi two-seater's back. It's been too long since we've heard that thing around Albert Park. But that brings us to the end, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for coming back from your holiday for this, Scott.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
And thank you all for joining us. We will be back next week on Monday as normal. We just had a public holiday in Victoria and Scott needed an extra day off.
Oh, spare me.
Thank you all so much for coming. We'll see you next time.